death race is for sociopathic killers. You gotta have gravel in your guts. You have to live for the smell of motor oil and high-octane fuel. You gotta love the sound of rubber on asphalt and the taste of blood in your mouth. And when you go to sleep at night, I mean that deep, grim sleep, the sound of bullets whizzing past your head should give you comfort. So, Mr. Strong and Silent, you made it a stuff.
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's Death Race Retrospective Series.
Sure, it's violent, but that's the way we love it. Violent, violent, violent.
Hosted by Jacob.
Motherfucker's crazy,
but cool.
Stuart.
You have the skills I require to keep the legend alive.
And Brock.
Whoever named your car the Bull was only half right.
But be warned, this episode will contain detailed plot spoilers and strong language.
You know what the Dalai Lama said about committees? Oh, that's right. He didn't talk about committees because he wasn't a pussy.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Sounds like the others are stacked against us.
Then do what you do best. Try.
Today we're talking about Death Race 2, starring Luke Goss, Fred Kohler, Tenet Phoenix, Robin Shao, Lauren Cohen, Danny Trejo!
Finally someone I recognize!
Ving Rhames, Sean Bean! Directed by Raoul Rene, this is Brock, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is the motherfucker who's crazy, but cool, Jacob.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing, guys. I heard the enthusiasm last week. It was good entertainment, but it didn't make money. It's kind of strange that Universal decided they could go forward, but they are going forward in a way that usually is a very bad omen. This did not get a theatrical release. Death Race 2 came out to, Redbox in January 2011, straight to streaming, straight to plastic disc.
I wonder if they had different ambitions. You could correct me, Stuart, because you worked in the industry. But I remember after loving that one we discussed last week, you live out in LA, you could sign up for these services where you could be part of a test audience. And I used to do that a lot. You get to see a free movie. Sometimes not all the special effects are there, but you get to see free movies. And I remember getting an invitation to see this. Now, maybe they do that with direct-to-video stuff as well. I can't imagine they do, but it did make me wonder if they had ambitions at one point to try to theatrically release this.
Well, I do want to point out that Paul W.S. Anderson's name is still on it.
He's a producer now.
He's producing it, and he was involved in the writing of the story. He didn't write the script per se, but he thought this is the direction they should go. And yes, had the movie made money, I have no doubt that Paul W.S. Anderson would have made this for theaters as this story. This feels like it was built to continue on as a prequel what he started.
So I'm curious, this was released direct to video here in the States, but what about like overseas? They often put these things out theatrically, right? So do you guys know if it was released overseas?
I looked at where I go to find out box office information, and there was no international dollars about theatrical release.
Interesting. So my question is, I know Ving Rhames has the Mission Impossible series, right? But at this time, was it 2010? I don't see a lot of Ving Rhames stuff.
I mean, that's his only series, right?
Arby's, if that's a series.
I guess.
Arby's.
And then Sean Bean was recently on Game of Thrones right around this time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the rest of them, I think, I know, the only person else I know is besides Danny Trejo, who's in lots of stuff, is Robin Shao, who was in the Mortal Kombat movies.
Who? Oh, okay, 14K.
Yeah, 14K. He was in the Mortal Kombat movies. So I know him, and he was also in the last movie, right? He was a repeat same guy. So I'm just curious on the cast, if it wasn't ever intended to be anything more than a direct-to-video, why Ving Rhames and Sean Bean are here? And that's just my only question.
Well, once I see what they do, they stand around. To me, that's geezer teasers. You get Bruce Willis, and then he doesn't actually do anything in the film.
Got it.
Yeah, they're not getting into cars. They're not actually going to be on this set very long. You're right. It could be a day of shooting, a long weekend for them.
You guys picked up what I was throwing down. So yes, that's exactly what I'm seeing.
They got a vacation to South Africa where this was shot, which really stood out to me when they zoomed past the Cape Diamond Hotel. I'm like, oh, this is South Africa, isn't it? And it was.
So let's be clear. They are continuing on with what they set up last time without Jason Statham, without Tyrese, without Joan Allen. What is going to be the tie? Interestingly, prequel. We're going to show you how this race even came to be. Who is Frankenstein? Why was he ever popular? These are the questions that part two are going to try to answer.
Which I did not know going into this film. Like at the beginning, I'm like, okay, what is this? Another guy's going to get thrown into jail. We're going to do the same thing all over again.
Right. That's what you'd expect. That is the obvious.
And then, yeah, in the first act, I realized, oh, this is going to be a prequel. The death race has not happened yet.
So here's my thing. When I hear direct to video, that's strike one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when I hear prequel, that's strike two. It's so hard to find a good prequel movie. And they always throw it out, we're doing a prequel, we're doing a prequel. And like Better Call Saul is phenomenal. There's a good example of a great prequel.
That's like the only one, the exception that proves the rule.
I guess so, because I've watched the Star Wars prequels and there's some highlights in there, but they're certainly not the original trilogy. And we can go on and on. You guys just reviewed the Hunger Games prequel, right? So, I mean, come on, Harry Potter ones, it goes on and on and on that they just think prequels are a good idea. Okay, it rarely works.
Okay, I agree with you. You've made excellent points, but as counter, I will simply offer this. Sometimes it's not a sequel or a prequel, but in rebooting something, it can be really nice to see, case in point, Casino Royale. How did that iconic James Bond become the person we think about? That is a movie that is sort of a prequel to our understanding of James Bond. So in that way, oh, maybe in only that way, something like Batman Begins or Casino Royale works.
I mean, this is a movie starring Luke Goss. Prequel is the least of my concerns here. But honestly, though, this is direct-to-video Death Race. I didn't even know it was a prequel going in, but I feel like this, when you have Frankenstein, a driver who's often replaced, I said with Death Race 2000, I wanted Death Race 1990. I wanted the prequel to that, telling us more about David Carradine's character. So I'm totally open to that. And like, again, Luke Goss, direct-to-video, directed by the guy who did Inhumans. I have very low expectations. Prequels is the thing I'm least worried about now.
You've seen Luke Goss in other things?
Yeah, Hellboy 2, The Golden Army under heavy prosthetics.
Yes, it should be said, when you've seen him before, he is in Guillermo del Toro movies as a monster creature effects. You will not recognize him this way. Blade 2, apparently he's one of the vampires as well. He was in Tekken. I'm on the video game retrospective.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, I haven't seen that one, yeah.
I don't want to talk about it, but I don't remember him, and you don't want to watch this. I believe his resume also touts his appearance as Danny Zuko in the London revival of Grease. So the guy's got range.
He was in a boy band with his brother, twin brother, called Bros. I wish I could track that down. That sounds amazing.
Bros? The British band from the 80s?
Yeah.
Small Town Boy?
Is that who? I didn't know that's who did that.
Oh, wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that's actually a legendary band.
Oh, okay. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. What I find impressive is that you knew that name. I never heard of that band.
Yeah, I thought that was a joke, Bros. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a known quantity. That is a true 80s one-hit wonder.
Oh, okay. I'll have to look it up. Yeah.
But it does feel like they're going for Jason Statham light, getting this guy that's bald. Like, they're trying to trick viewers.
Yes, that is what you resent, is like the people that design box covers back when we had video stores to look like the thing you want, and then you get home and go, oh, God, it's not. Yeah.
This is Transmorphers, not Transformers.
But you're right. The Inhumans director, just to reiterate, because people, I know they don't know what that is.
I mean, the Scorpion King 3 director as well. Like, nothing good on this guy's resume.
Again, this is Universal. They take their franchises and make sequels that nobody asked for. And yeah, you get tricked because you think it probably should have the same quality as the original. But yeah, this director made the worst thing that the MCU has ever done. I don't want to hear about your Marvel's complaints or Eternals or even the Thor movies.
Even Madam Web, man. I'll watch Madam Web any day over Inhumans.
Right, yes, yeah. When a red wig and a giant dog are fighting, beating up on people, you've lost the war. And I had to pay IMAX prices to watch that. So I will always remember hating that movie.
So already a not recommend. I feel like a lot of hate's going to be carried over.
A sequel to a movie I absolutely did not enjoy.
No, you did not.
Starring, yeah, rejects and directors of incompetent material. I'm curious. Again, I hold on to the curiosity of if my problem was, in fact, Anderson didn't use the, you know, techniques well and Statham wasn't the right anti-hero. I don't know if it could be fixed, but I'm wondering what the difference will be without them. Unlike you guys, I'm glad that they're nowhere near here.
Yeah, the problem is, though, like, all those cars are coming back. I guess they put those cars in a lot when you pay $300,000 for them. You want to be able to recycle them. But it looks like at least the main cars, they're going to recycle all those, and they look the same as that last film.
Mm-hmm. Now, I got to ask, which version, rated or unrated? Why would you have a rated version when it doesn't go to theaters?
Yeah, I don't know. How do I tell the difference?
Male butts. Yeah, if you're seeing Luke Goss screw a girl on top of a bus and you're seeing his white, pale ass.
It's pretty graphic. I was surprised.
Yeah. You are watching unrated.
That's interesting because usually you see the women be exploited that way, not the men. And this one, it was the other way around.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, don't worry. There's lots of sexual assault in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, there is. Yep. So, yes, I saw the unrated cut, unbeknownst to me. As you know, if I have a choice between rated and unrated, I always go rated because unrated rarely adds anything of value. But, hey, I didn't know which one I watched. I watched the one that was available to me. That's all there is to it.
Yeah, I agree. I was like, show me the movie theater that played this as a rated movie.
Well, besides that sex scene, what else happened in this movie? Stuart, give us a plot.
All right, long before Jason Statham and Tyrese broke free from Terminal Island's three-day death race, the penitentiary was just a simple post-apocalyptic hellhole where racial tensions flared and folks named Big Bill and Apache stabbed each other in the neck with toothbrush shanks. And news reporter September Jones, played by Walking Dead's Lauren Cohen, is the visionary who sees the entertainment potential of such behavior. The TV journalist convinces her boss, R.H. Whalen, played by none other than Marcellus Wallace, Ving Rhames, to greenlight Death Match, which is a pay-per-view prison cage fight. But the inmates are more inclined to surrender than fight to the death, and it just doesn't bring in the ratings. So then September notices new inmate Carl Lucas, played by our star Luke Goss, and he is a wheelman and bank robber who had a spectacular high-speed chase that was caught on live TV and who now spends his days working in the prison machine shop, melting down the surplus of automobiles. So why not let him and other gearhead convicts race around in unsafe conditions and call it Death Race? Yes, this is a prequel, and yes, the inmates are happy to have an opportunity to win their freedom. But they're actually more interested in claiming $1 million. There's a bounty that has been put on Luke's head by his mob boss, Sean Bean. And so for the first 2 days of Death Race, most of the nine participants are gunning for our anti-hero until Luke forms an alliance with a triad leader named 14K. We know him. He's in the last movie. And he's played again by Mortal Kombat's Liu Kang, Robin Chow. He saves the Chinese driver from Nemesis Xander in the hopes that he'll repay that life debt and kill Sean Bean. And then tragedy strikes. Luke's black Mustang is sabotaged by mechanic Rocco, and the driver is trapped for an extended period in a burning car. He emerges barely alive with burns on 80% of his body, and September Jones proposes that he just continue on the next day wearing a metal mask and black leather, and he can call himself the franchise's iconic death racer, Frankenstein. And Luke does indeed take to this new persona, but not because he's dying to be in a reality TV series. While everyone else is peeling away from the starting line at day three, he turns his car around and takes the opportunity to run down September Jones. And this happens at the same time that the duplicitous mechanic Rocco is being stabbed in the shower, and the Chinese triad is assassinating Sean Bean in his home. So the conclusion really sets the stage for the Statham reboot. And apparently a couple more straight-to-tape sequels we're going to cover in the weeks ahead as credits roll.
What is the name of the company in Resident Evil, the Umbrella Corporation?
Umbrella.
Umbrella, right?
But you're on the right track. Wayland is the company in the Alien franchise. And I've never seen a Paul W.S. Anderson movie that didn't have extensive referencing to James Cameron's Aliens. He always does it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
So it is the actual one from Aliens.
Yeah. And the last time they made a joke about oatmeal and it was cornbread in Aliens. It was the same thing. He will always do a bit from Aliens. For sure.
All right. Yeah, because I was thinking the idea of what this company is and how it's omnipresent reminded me of that.
Yeah, it owns a TV news channel and it owns a prison, apparently. It owns everything. And so it's just easy to have that synergy. When we get started here, we see a prison riot in which the reporters are already there. They knew it was going to go down, apparently, and they're going to want to televise it live.
And look, I'm just going by the moment here. Where I am, seeing this prison riot, I wish we were back at the steel mill with Statham, who actually knows how to fight. Here, I could see people like actually pulling their punches. It's shot horribly. It looks bad, and it is not adrenalizing.
Yeah, the fight, the choreography was terrible. Also, there's like, what, 4 or 5 racial slurs in the first minute of this movie. It was unbelievable.
No, that's what I'm saying. With the sexual assault and like white guys using the N-word, it just feels like this is 2010, like just edgelord, like we gotta push it. Like they're trying to tap into that irreverence of Death Race 2000, but it's on the wrong side of it.
Yeah, and also it's kind of like an equal opportunity. They throw out all different kinds for all different kinds of people. So they don't just focus on one. They offend everybody.
Yeah, what that tells me, and I agree with all of your points, but it actually makes me a little bit more forgiving about the experience I'm about to have is we're not telling you this is the next action blockbuster franchise. This is a Corman movie. In essence, it is in the spirit of what has happened before.
Yeah, you're right.
And there's going to be nudity and violence. Like, it's just trashy in a way that makes me ask less of it than I did last week.
This one does feel much more in line with what Corman would do.
Absolutely. His name's not on it, but it could be.
He's an executive producer. I think he gets that for all of them.
Right. Well, yeah, that means nothing. I don't think he's on set.
He gets a check. Yeah.
Yeah, he gets a check, but it's truly something he would be, is the word proud of? It's something that he would produce for sure. Whereas the movie last week didn't have, for better or for worse, his signature.
Yeah, because that had to go out to theaters.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And I think that that's where I'm meeting this movie. It's straight to tape and it wants to be trash and it's being offensive and it's not having the same amount of money. And okay, that's what we're doing here. I do laugh that this reporter ends up going back to Wayland. Yes, that maybe this is even the company that is going to try to weaponize the xenomorph from Aliens. And they're like, yeah, we'll start with a death match. I'll fund you your idea that were bum fights still a thing at this point? I know that at a certain time, people were selling videotapes of, you know, homeless people attacking each other.
I feel like that was early 2000s. We had Celebrity Deathmatch, the claymation thing on MTV. Yeah, bum fights. I feel like that was early part of the 2000s.
Yeah, maybe a decade before.
The Jackass era.
We are in an era where reality TV, which I feel like all stems from like extreme Japanese game shows, like are now on American television. We have an entire generation that's getting more used to the idea of people doing goofy slash dangerous things for our entertainment. Wipeout, what have you. And so, yeah, you would throw a little money at this and maybe you could put it on Fox or was UPN still around? You could maybe put on a reality prison fight show on one of the lesser networks.
Yeah, Spike TV, FX, there you go. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we found it. Spike. Spike would definitely air Deathmatch. Yeah.
I don't even know if that's around anymore, but...
The line, either you take me live now or I tell your wife everything, pretty much tells me everything I need to know about the character of...
September Jones.
I call her Ms. Jones the entire time in my notes. She's just Jonesy. She's exactly the type of villain that makes sense, and they set her up right away.
Does she sleep around to get her way to the top? Absolutely, because they're going to tell us like 10 times that she does.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very much in the femme fatale. It's what I wanted Joan Allen to be. I'll be honest. I wanted more out of Joan Allen. I wanted her to be a ball buster. And this is that character. To me, this is a fix from last week.
I like the attitude of September Jones. Look, if I had extra money, I would recast this. Like, I'd recast everyone, to be honest. But yeah, I guess I got to go with it because that's what this is. But I liked what they were doing with the character, even if the acting like left me wanting. Yes, it's going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the character, and she plays the one note very well throughout the whole time. But here up front, you get who this person is right away and the way she delivers the line. I was surprised she was going to be in so much of the movie. I thought she was actually going to be one of the first people to die. I was surprised how much she ends up being such a linchpin to this story.
Yeah, she is the main villain, really. I think at the end of the day, she's responsible for all of the massacre.
Based on how she ends up, yes, she is the main villain.
And yes, she's the final kill of the film as well. So yes, I don't know Lauren Cohen. I did watch Walking Dead for a season or two. Apparently she's been in the whole series, but I don't remember her. There's a lot of people there.
Okay. And then right after we meet her, what is with watching Sean Bean eat for like 10 minutes? It's an extreme close-up of his mouth while he's chewing. I was really put off by this whole like Sean Bean chewing. I don't need to see that much. What is this mastication stuff? I don't need this.
I don't know. If we're doing nods to films, there was a scene with the guy who played his dad in Lord of the Rings, like just close-up of him chewing on like tomatoes and chicken. It was real gross. Maybe that's a nod to that.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, he's making a sandwich later. I do feel like, yeah, Sean Bean is here for the catering. Like he just, it was a favor. He had nothing to do for the day.
Go on a safari in Africa, get a free sandwich.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
He must have read that article that pointed out that Brad Pitt eats his way through most movies he does. You know, he's eating something and I'll do that same thing.
Yeah. I don't really notice Sean Bean here. He is just the setup for our main character. You know, though, I'm trying to figure out who is this fake Jason Statham. Does he have a British accent? He doesn't sound exactly like Jason Statham.
I think he's actually British, the actor, and he's hiding the accent.
Yeah, it feels like he's trying to do American.
Yeah.
Okay, that sounds right. Because I hear it come through, but it's not intentional. All right.
Right, yeah. Every once in a while, a word slips and stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For sure. We mentioned last time that Michael Bay had an influence over the movie. Well, right now, when Sean Bean gives this guy the car for the bank robbery that's going to go wrong, I was thinking, hey, it's Bumblebee. And Bumblebee can transform and make this death race even cooler. And they didn't go there.
Yeah, they can't go there.
Bumblebee was no Shelby Cobra.
Yeah, yeah.
You're making car people mad now, Brock.
Apparently I am, but I just enjoy the fact, oh, it looks like Bumblebee.
Look, somebody had a nice yellow sports car and they could use it. And so they do, yeah.
They rented it.
Yep, for sure they did, for sure.
They want to kick off with racing. Again, that was a complaint last time. Why are you telling me Jason Statham is a great racer that people would kill his wife to incarcerate and then have him at a steel mill? Here, we're going to get an example of Luke, as the character will be nicknamed. I'm just going to call him Luke. Luke, throughout this movie, demonstrates that he is a driver. You know, he's a getaway driver. And if this crew of bank robbers would listen to him, they would have gotten away scot-free.
Yeah, I just don't know the wisdom of being a getaway driver with a Shelby Cobra. Like, that very flashy is going to stand out if there is a chase. But I guess they got that rented for the day, so they're going to use it here.
He wants to abort because he sees the cops pull up and he's radioing to the guys, not going to work, give up. But Vinny is a hothead. Vinny is Sean Bean's cousin, I think, a relation of some kind, nephew.
Nephew.
Yeah. He's gotten the job through nepotism and ergo not very good at it. And before the scene is over, he's dead. And yeah, they're running from cops.
So how do you feel about this? Because what they did with Statham, which you didn't like, so maybe you love this time, Stuart, but Statham is always like, save the cat, save the cat, save the cat, good guy. Good guy, good guy. I'm expecting the same here. Even if, okay, you're the getaway driver. We talked about Ryan Gosling doing that. Like, I don't see him as a bad guy. When he shoots a cop, then it's hard to, like, you kind of deserve this now. Because I thought he goes in there. Again, the typical hero goes in. They find some way to save the cops and save their crew. But it all goes wrong. And he's a cop killer at this point.
I love it. Again, this is exactly what I was talking about last time. They made that character so boring. He's so innocent. Yeah, this guy is really complicated. He deserves to go to jail. And so it's not a tragedy that he's going to be incarcerated. That instinct is gone, and I love that.
So they also have it, though, all go in slow motion as if he's watching his life end. That's what I got out of that slow motion bit here of him watching all the action going down in slow motion. Like he realizes his life is over as he knew it. And yeah, slow motion's used a lot in this movie. And here I found it indulgent by the director to the point where it's so obvious to me why he was using it, but it's better off left for grenade shots later in the movie. It kind of felt like this opening scene with the bank robbery robbery and things like that. All these opening scenes to get him into prison, I get that they're here for a purpose, but I was uninterested and bored and waiting for them to get us to the prison.
But you do get my point.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It's a similar story. I get it. You like it because they're developing the character different. From my point of view, because the action isn't as strong, like, okay, yeah, maybe they're doing something more interesting. But at least at this point, I'm not hooked into this film yet. I'm like, I'm seeing the strings and the seams, and it looks cheap, and it hasn't convinced me yet. It will convince me at one point. Spoiler alert. But at this point, I am not impressed. Arms folded, exactly what I expected to get out of the straight-to-video thing.
And the music is like a Casio keyboard drum beat. It's terrible.
Yeah. But what you would expect, what we all feared it would be. It is living to the expectations of what straight to tape is.
For sure.
And so this part is everything that I thought it would be. I'm finding, again, I picked up the disc from the library with arms folded. I could barely carry it to the counter. I was so against watching it. But again, what I'm perking up, I'm not excited. I'm not going to be excited to be watching Death Race 2 or any continuation of what I didn't like last week. But I am feeling like, huh, there seems to be a different calculation to arranging what's going to be a cookie cutter setup. And so I'm kind of impressed. I guess. Impress is a weird word because I see the seams too. It's not a particularly lavish production, but I like certain things more here in this beginning. I'm on board more than I ever was last time.
And it's because of what they're doing with Luke Goss in this film.
Yes. And I just kind of like the idea that we're going to spend some time. We see Danny Trejo in the opening. He's not in the movie last time, but we do see Liss, which was kind of a weird character that I wanted to spend more time with. And we're going to take that time. Things that happen, characters that we had, will be more justified by this story.
I'll be straight up. I was excited when I saw Liss on that bus with Luke as they're going along that big long bridge. I think they just recycled that scene from the last movie. But I'm like, there's Liss. Do we ever find out though what he did? Maybe I missed it, but like I know he's gonna kill someone in the shower, but I didn't catch what he did to get in prison.
Freeze frame when he gets called into the death match. They run his stats by the screen real fast. Mm-hmm. Matricide. He killed his mom.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, that makes some sense, I guess, for his character.
Yeah, he kind of has a Norman Bates-ish, kind of boyish.
Yeah.
What was interesting, I looked up this actor. He was the older son in Mr. Mom, like a personal favorite of mine. Like, he was this kid actor in that. Yes.
Exactly. Matricide. See? This is what I'm talking about.
His acting here, he kind of like faded into the background. He had stuff going on last time, and clearly he was one of the more interesting characters in the last movie that didn't really have a lot of screen time. Here, I mean, I'm not saying he's the world's greatest actor, but what he's doing here is leaps and bounds above a lot of other people around him. The level of acting here is definitely direct-to-video for me right now. It's really lower bar. And last time we came into the movie, and I, you know, I wanted a Jason Statham kind of thing, but you can really appreciate the performers last time versus what we're getting in the first 10 minutes here. Even Sean Bean is coming off not well.
You think Liss was better last movie than this movie?
No, I think we have much more opportunity. What I'm saying is Liss is showing exactly the caliber of acting that we're not getting because what he's doing is so much more nuanced and better than practically everybody else, if not everybody else in this movie.
The people that are dialing it in that are mad at their agent for booking Death Race 2.
Yeah, clearly. Even Sean Bean is coming across badly, whereas this guy is really doing a lot for me in the little bits that he has here. And it's just a shame that he's highlighting by mistake what we're not getting and what we didn't realize we got in the last movie. Again, no one had Oscar caliber performances last time, but you can really tell that the acting is lower tier here.
I don't know that the acting's any worse this time, but the star wattage is lower, right? Like,
for sure.
That's what I feel is like when you're a star, you bring a certain electricity just period by being there. And no one's impressed by Luke Goss. No one knows who Luke Goss is. And yes, we're all thinking fake Jason Statham.
You love his band and you don't even know who he is.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's so weird he's in Bros.
That is bizarre, yeah.
But yes, I mean, I'll say this. It's part of his character that he is going to make a full body commitment. Maybe he's not a great actor, but we see a lot of him in this. We have the shower scenes and again, so many butt shots in this thing. It has a point. At first, I think exploitation movie, of course, you're going to show naked people. But what's being set up here, I don't realize it, but he's Frankenstein. They're going to take all of this away. You know, he's going to be called a pretty boy. I think that's an exaggeration, but we get it that he is physically fit. You know, he's showing off his body. money and all of that he is going to lose. This is a tragedy. I had no idea that was coming.
I thought it was going to come slowly because we'll get like after day one or something, he gets hurt and you see him getting sewed up. I'm like, why was that scene? Oh, he's going to slowly get scars put all over. They're going to accelerate that real quick. But yeah, I caught that they are giving him that Frankenstein scarred up motif. But they start here by showing a perfect body, more or less.
I forgot about Frankenstein. Yes.
Yes, I actually did catch on fairly early, as soon as he got to the prison, that he is going to be Frankenstein. But, you know, they did a good job. Sometimes prequels, you know, they go to the well sometimes too often of, wink, wink, here, this is a part you're going to want to remember later. Here, they really didn't really tease it too much. It was more subtle, and I give them the compliment for that. I did figure it out pretty early on, but it was kind of nice that it wasn't a hit you over the head obvious.
But here's probably why I wasn't thinking of it. They never justified to me why people like Frankenstein. I don't know why he has this cult appeal to him other than you really like the mask or whatever. And I think they did show the mask when they were doing the credits early on. I think I should have known it's coming, and maybe I even in the back of my head knew that someone was going to be Frankenstein. But what I note about this guy is people like him because he's noble. First thing he does is say, I'm not going to rat on Sean Bean. I'm too loyal. I'm going to be a good guy. I'm not going to take a plea deal. I'm not going to talk about his, you know, criminal enterprise, even though I could. I was close enough to it. I could name names, but I'm that kind of criminal. Again, that makes him a cooler anti-criminal. He has a code of ethics, but he does bad stuff. That, to me, is what you want in an exploitation movie like this.
Right there, you nail it. The fact that he won't snitch, I'm like, yep, that's true. Like, that is how this character would be. So it just clicked with me. Like, I'm like, okay, this gets a little bit of credit now because they clicked into something that feels right. And then I love, like, yeah, Sean Bean's not going to trust him. So he's going to put out a hit. The warden's like, no, you don't use hit. Like, I love that they use that fact that he won't snitch as this huge mechanic for all these different little subplots and strings being pulled.
Yeah, and last time I kept asking, why does Machine Gun Joe want to kill Frankenstein? And here they have a very good reason for why people want to kill Luke. There's money involved. This criminal, Sean Bean, is paying folks to do that. We have an early scene where some guy named, Big Bill, I think his name is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the Machine Gun Joe of this one.
The tallest guy in this cast. Yes, he is sort of the Machine Gun Joe. He does drive the Ram later. But yeah, he's got a shank toothbrush and he's going to come at Luke. And Luke can demonstrate his martial arts or fighting technique, whatever you want to call it. And again, it's what I was asking for. Justify these relationships. I don't need them to be super complicated or even that interesting. I just need them to be fully formed.
Yeah, all right. And also List pushes Luke out of the way so he doesn't get shanked right away. So we see List develop a connection with Luke. I hear what you're saying. And these beats should be noticed. And I agree with you that it's better written in that sense for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still having trouble with the bad fight choreography. And I'm still having trouble with the acting. The first thing for me is if the acting is standing out in a negative way, it's very challenging for me to stay invested in the movie. And so at this point, what you were feeling last time, Stuart, I think I'm feeling here. I'm like, okay, can we please just get to the race? Because I agree with you, it's wonderful to have this character stuff, but the acting portraying that character stuff is making me wish for, how about some bang, bang, shoot, shoot, drive, drive?
Yeah, that's the crazy thing. I was shocked you were complaining how long it took to get to the race last time, because I'm like, no, I'm enjoying this film. Get to the race, like when we get to it, and I'm into it. This one I wrote down, I'm like, 50 minutes to get to the race. Like the first half of this film, in retrospect, I enjoy all the writing. Once I buy into the action and it gets more credible action,
Yes,
the seams are just showing a little bit too much. And yeah, the acting is bad, but it's not Brown Arrow bad. It's just like, this is how most Corman films are. Like, they're not all as good as Death Race 2000. Most of them are not.
Yeah, this is a trash movie, and this is what you get with trash. And I accept it because it's at that level. I mean, I think I'm trying to meet it where it's telling me that it is. This is good enough for me because it is straight to tape. If it were playing in a movie theater, I would have a different level of resentment. But the other thing I would offer is you might be waiting for the death race, but they get to the death match pretty quickly. What you're supposed to be entertained with for the start of Act Two is that it's just a cage gladiatorial match.
And I like this as evolution, but at first I got so mad because I'm like, oh, I bet this film is going to be an hour and a half of just cage fights, and then they'll come up with a death race at the very end. Like, Thankfully, it does not go that way. But I do like this evolution because I'm a big fan of Thunderdome. I think that should be done in real life. And so, yeah, get these cage matches.
Wow.
Get the ratings. I'm all for it.
Okay. I see that. Anyway, I will say that it is a lower budget choice, right? Yes, it happens to work really well for the prequel that they're telling. But if they had more money, they would be in cars already, right?
Yes. I mean, obviously.
But look, eventually they're going to pull out two flamethrowers and have a flamethrower fight, and I'm there for it. Like, every once in a while, they get it right. The money's not there, but like, even with that chase scene after they rob the bank, when they toss out the grenades to blow up all those cop cars, and those are real cars, like, with real explosions, like, every once in a while, it does something real impressive.
Yeah.
I agree. The cars flipping over was impressive.
Yeah.
Some of the stunts were good. The explosions looked real in that car chase in the beginning. Absolutely right.
They don't have a lot of money, but they know where to spend it most of the time.
They do. And then here with this cage fight, what's memorable about it is that List gets selected like Katniss does in Hunger Games.
Yes, I wrote down Hunger Games.
To go in there with Big Bill, and he's just like, you know, he's going to get killed. There's no way he can't.
No chance.
And so then Luke jumps in to save him. And what I was hoping for was more of the weapons. So of all the stuff that Luke, when he finally gets into the bus to get the weapons, when he's finally able to do it, he pulls out a flamethrower too. And I thought, that's a really big missed opportunity. They could have had, like, I don't know, a throwing star that make the thing blow up, the tank blow up. They could have had like a mace on the chain again. They could have had just a regular old staff, something different than two guys having a flamethrower fight, because how interesting is a flamethrower fight?
Counterpoint, go watch Mandy, where Nick Cage has a chainsaw fight. Like, sometimes the same weapons, when they're extreme as those, are fun.
And I wanted to say, when Jacob's like death scenario happens and Brock, you and I are in the cage,
yeah.
I want the flamethrower and you can have the mace.
Yes.
That's fine. I would want a flamethrower.
You want that ranged weapon.
Yeah, I would want the flamethrower.
I'm understanding what you're saying. I'm just saying, in the movie I'm watching, I just don't think it's very interesting to have a flamethrower versus a flamethrower. That's all.
Yeah, well, I like that they had a flamethrower. Again, I think this movie is benefiting from the very low expectations that I have and the fact that I truly did not enjoy anything last time. This movie is creeping up on me. I'm finding that I'm like, oh, I'm not hating you.
I was entertained by this cage match fight. I mean, I was surprised because I was resentful that we're having this and not racing. And then the fact when he jumps in and they have a fight, I was like, okay, good, okay. I mean, I don't like the flamethrowers, but yeah, okay.
And this is where you see Luke get that popularity you were talking about. Another riot starts and like the people just love this. Like the whole prison's in chaos. Yeah, this is a ratings hit. I could see it.
Yeah.
Yes. He impresses people and inspires that they can do it too. That they tear off the fence and kind of everyone's jumping in here. Even the announcer girls whose job it is to wear a really tight t-shirt and walk by and hold up the number of the round. You know, like we have this woman who's going to be his future navigator, Katrina. And she's throwing punches down.
Yeah, this is where they're going to show like the women prisoner type movie type thing. Like they're going to get attacked by male prisoners, but they could kick ass because they're tough females and they all fight back.
Which again, I want to remind folks, Corman made women in prison movies.
Yes, that's like half his films.
Whether you want it or not, I cannot say. But if you want an exploitation B movie, this one knows what it is doing.
But the last time they bust the women in to be the navigators for ratings, they said, right? They bust them in and out. Here, they're just, the women are just there.
No.
Well, because a fight's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. They don't establish it in the setup, but later after he's getting off the operating table, she's being moved onto a bus. And so we're to take the knowledge we already know that they need TNA for the ratings and know that she was bussed in from the women's prison to hold up the signs.
But there's like 10 girls, right? So I was wondering, do they fight also in the cages?
No, well, I didn't imagine that. I just thought that they would cut to them kind of like a cheerleader.
They do have female wrestlers, but I think they were just ring girls announcing the rounds.
Yeah, that is what I'm imagining. Also worth pointing out, we had one other fight setting up supporting characters. Another complaint I had last time. Who are the other people? We have 14K. Why is he called 14K?
I don't know.
14 kills.
Oh, 14 kills?
But does he change his name every time?
No, but they said 14 kills on the outside or the inside, something like that. I don't know. I just went with it.
Yeah, if I'm a, you know, millionaire, I can, you know, be cool. But like 14K and you're like, all right.
I mean, I take 14K if anyone's got it.
But anyway, 14K has Xander Grady down, who I think is supposed to be like Aryan Brotherhood or whatever.
Yeah.
And makes the choice not to kill him with the axe. Everyone puzzles over it. I'm not exactly sure. But the point is, there's some resistance to actually kill it. That at the end of the day, this death match isn't showing much death.
Well, yeah, they maybe do it too much to set up this whole relationship between Xander and 14K, but trying to listen to what they said, it was something about, like, that basically he's humiliating him by not killing him. Like, now he owes him his life and he's in debt to him, which is a bigger shame than killing him, apparently.
Okay.
Aren't they on different factions, too? Like, one's Yakuza and one's, you said, the Brotherhood? Like, so, like...
Triad.
That's it. So, if he does end up killing him, then there's going to be, like, an all-out war.
It could cause a gang war, yeah.
Right. So that's why he'd also so humiliated him instead, which is worse for personal reasons, but he's avoiding a giant turf war thing.
But it's bad TV. The point is the ratings are actually going down and the ratings peak. This show would probably be canceled and September would be without a job, except Luke did get baited into jumping into the cage and inspiring both the people around the cage and presumably the people watching at home. I can now see why, although people don't know that he...
They don't know he's Frankenstein when he shows up as Frankenstein.
Do they? Yeah, I guess they wouldn't.
I don't think they do.
They can't. Yeah, so, all right. So he can't really coast on this reputation, but I can at least see why people are investing in this now.
For most of the film, while he's Luke, you could understand it.
Yeah, September is going to sell a new concept now. She had already seen this guy fight the guy with the toothbrush shank. She's seen the guy, like, he works in the machine shop and drove a car around. She's starting to reconceptualize her concept and come up with Death Race. And that's kind of cool. I kind of like that we're watching this thing evolve.
Yeah, this is always the problem with prequels, is that they got to tell us stuff that we already know, and then hopefully they make that interesting. I don't know if they're making it interesting per se, but I'm going along with it. As having to invest myself in this Death Race straight to video franchise, I'm like, oh, like, this is hitting all the notes that I'd want to know about Death Race. Like, it's, if you got to give me a prequel, if I have to be told information that I don't really need, not doing a bad job.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's watchable. I'll give you that. And I was able to watch the cage fight and not get pissed. I was very happy that they get to the race when they do, because for God's sake, get to it. I don't need to know how Death Race started, but if you're going to tell me that story, this actually is better than it needs to be to get where we need to go, honestly.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more with that sentiment. I don't want to be here, but now that I am, I'm finding I'm not hating it. And that's probably as much as I could be asked, you know, of the movie. Like, don't make me hate it and you're winning. But this thing got canceled. And the reason is we have this warden. There's Warden Parks. And this is another setup. We have a warden that's actually, I don't know if he's nice, but he's at least thoughtful enough to be like, this is unethical.
He wants to follow the law and not, like, exploit everyone.
Yeah, this is unethical. We shouldn't do this. We shouldn't exploit prisoners for ratings. And this is too many people are getting hurt. And again, that gets September thinking about how she can get rid of him and setting up the idea that Joan Allen is going to come in by the end of this movie. Of course, they can't afford Joan Allen.
No.
Of course, if Joan Allen called them and said, hey, I want to do another one and I'll do it for scale, they would have written her into this movie.
Yes.
Sure.
But it kind of is nice. They're taking their weaknesses and making it a strength by having this other warden who they can now see as, you know, the counterpoint to her.
And I don't know who this actor is, but this guy playing Warden Parks, he gives enough sass, he gives enough pushback that I like him. Like, he recognizes this is wrong. He gets a few good one-liners in. Like, again, no one's winning any awards for here, but every once in a while, someone surprises me, and that is a surprise in a movie of this quality.
I do not concur. I do not like him at all. And then the fact that he has this moral high ground he's standing on, I could have used a little more of an actor for that role.
Okay.
I don't know. I thought it was funny when he's quoting scriptures. It made it feel like he was referencing the Shawshank warden who is always quoting stuff from the Bible. I don't know. I smiled.
I can't think of a worse put down for September than you're not good enough in bed for me to buy into your concept. Like, he really does put her in her place. And so she knows the one person that will always be trying to kiss her is Ving Rhames. She goes back to the boss and is like, look, let me take you on a tour. There's so much of this prison we're not using. What if we turn it into a racetrack?
That is the funny thing. Like, we'll get introduced to these crews. Luke gets put on this crew with Goldberg, Danny Trejo's character. And their job is to dismantle cars, melt down the parts, and turn them into, like, guns and bullets? I don't think this is how any of that works.
Well, I mean, of course, it's not. I mean, but that feels like old Corman satirical jokes that, yeah, we're just melting used cars and turning into weapons. Why waste a car like that when we can put the weapons on the car and have these guys roll around? I mean, the whole reality that we would have a death race is hard to justify.
It'd be awesome, though.
So that it is done in this campy kind of way is probably the most I could accept it. If you try to be more serious with it, if you try to Christopher Nolan this, I wouldn't buy it.
I also like that they show us that it being constructed a little bit. Like, it's like if you ever watch those old movies of Disneyland, how they constructed Disneyland. And like the amount of capital up front they have to do to get this death race started is unfathomable to me, that this company, regardless of how much money they actually have, it's a lark of an idea that September Jones has. And they're dropping so much money to make this track. I'm surprised of all the things that this movie does to explain, go out of their way to explain things. I'm sure they could have figured out a way to justify the track was already there and it's going to take a minimal capital investment. They didn't do that.
Well, here's the thing. It doesn't cost any money because it's free labor and all the metal is lying around. So you just have to accept the idea that these guys are ingenious enough.
Competent enough to know how to do it. Yes.
Yes, exactly. They're engineers, every one of them. Bank robber engineers.
Apparently some of them know how to do computer technology and they have a computer to put the shield and the sword manhole covers and things like that. Apparently they know how to hydraulics.
You think they use prisoners to like program all that?
I'm saying, like, they have to bring somebody in. Like, someone has to be an expert.
That would have been a fun movie.
So again, it's giving me permission to laugh at it, which is, I think, helpful because campy is the better way of experiencing this. I could not buy the movie's reality last time. So yes, let me scoff at this. And yeah, suddenly we're just there. It should just be said, it goes from being a light bulb idea of how about if we do this? Ving Rhames is like, only if we let the prisoners go after five times. That's his big contribution. It's like, it needs to have this incentive. And that's why they're going to want to do this. So yes, five times around, five death races, and you go free. Now everyone wants to do it.
And as we get into day one, right away, I almost turn around on this film where I'm like, ugh, this is cheap. This is crap. I'm not having a good time. You stated many times that you've done something better than that last one. For me, this is the first idea they had that really I'm like, oh, wow, this is a great idea that they should have put in that last one. There's 18 racers, but only 9 cars.
Yes. That is so satisfying. Yes.
Yeah, they got to all race and beat each other up and fight to get to those cars. I do wish they had to like kill those other 9. Like, I wanted it a little bit more violent, but good instinct, like the right move.
I agree completely. It was a really fun scene. And some of the camera work on this scene, too, was surprising. I mean, sometimes I want to shoot the guy in the head. Keep the camera still sometimes, buddy. But in this particular scene, some clever shots, and you could follow the action. And I really was interested in seeing who's going to get in the cars.
Right. And again, we're getting death, which last time I felt like people just wanted to race. And now they've retained more of that original exploitation. This is about body count carnage.
So the right decisions are being made so far. And then as they continue on with this first day, a lot more good decisions by the team here. I mean, the screenwriters and the director go on. I think this first round is something to look at.
Yeah.
I think if you want to be able to better track the drivers, they do this thing where they, I don't know how they got promo shots of them in front of the cars. They just fought 17 other people to get, but whatever. Looking past that. Yeah. They show you each one. I wrote down all their names. My favorite was Hillbilly. And then he got killed right away as soon as I learned who he was.
Great name too.
Mm-hmm. And Hillbilly, they even did the job of like he was sitting behind lists on the bus going in. So again, they do what they can. It has been 50 minutes to get here, but now that it has exploded, the movie is having fun with death. And I felt like everything they set up needed to be set up. Like, it didn't waste that time for me.
No, there's been a lot of setup. It's a prequel, and now it's clicking. Now that I've bought into the film more, thinking back, I'm like, okay, I could calm down about all my anger. Like, this is getting good. The fact, again, upstaging certain stunts that from the last film. You get this driver, Apache. I don't know if he's a Native American. He didn't look like it, but he gets out of his car, jumps onto another car, stabs the dude, and then jumps back on his car. Like, great stunts, great action sequences. Like, I was just shocked and surprised and thankful that they were using real cars and races in this. And they're actually doing some real impressive stunts now.
I agree with both of you. I didn't realize, Stuart, at this point, that all of that setup was meaningful, quote unquote, to the rest of the movie. I was where Jacob was. I was turning a corner at this point because I was getting a little tired of the bullshit. And now we're getting into it now, and as it goes on for the next 20 minutes, I'm realizing all of that stuff was actually, it's good. Again, it's direct to video.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is more skilled, and everything kind of has a payoff that you're not realizing it has a payoff for. Not like a satisfying payoff, but everything comes back around, which is, say it that way. So it's kind of, it's smarter than you would think it would be. And it's around here where I'm actually getting more interested. But for me, until I get to where you are, it was, oh, finally a race. Oh, finally some stunts. That death that Jacob just mentioned.
No, I'm right there with you. That's how I was. Like, until this race started and it got me excited, like, it totally changed me around on this film. I thought for sure, Red Arrow, and then this happened. I'm like, uh-oh, am I gonna like this now?
And it's so rare that a movie, like, at the halfway mark,
50 minutes in changes my mind, yeah.
Can change your mind like that, because usually it's the other way around. Usually you're giving it chances, and then it just does one thing or two things more that you just cannot give it anymore. And Star Trek Into Darkness is a good example of that, right? You want to keep trying to like it, and it just does not satisfy. Here, for some reason, it takes a turn that I'm able to go with it a different way. Mr. Markle, it's a rare movie for that. Again, it's a direct-to-video sequel.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the challenge.
Yeah, asterisk, asterisk, asterisk.
We're all pretty up on this, and some of that has to do with the fact of the low expectations, and I think that's important to keep. If you're coming here expecting the level of polish that you got last week, it doesn't have that. But if you're expecting a movie experience, which again, which was my major complaint of, like, this movie is crap last week, the writing, the setup to all of this, the characterization, dramatizing why we should care about our main lead, all of that is done with much more skill. And so, yes, I'm like you. I didn't think there was a way in hell I was going to recommend anything called Death Race ever again until we got someone whose name is not Paul W.S. Anderson off of the script. And this is, how can I complain? Again, it's meeting all of my complaints from last time and giving me a fix. I mean, even Katrina, I feel like all of those navigators did nothing last time. They were TNA. And here, she's going to have this cool moment where Big Bill is coming at them and they're going to do the thing where she has to climb out onto the car, but she, like, turns the gun to it and ends up, like, firing on him. She has a badass moment that didn't happen last week with Case. That just, we are seeing all these characters have more bloodlust, get more into the death of the race, and it's just all the difference.
Yeah, and I think that's the benefit of it being direct to video. Again, they wanted a test audience for this, but it feels like they're like, no, this is direct to video. Let's leave all the sleaziness, all the stuff you typically take out. And maybe for this kind of movie, it's better for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you're going to make an exploitation film, I believe Corman is right. You need to have TNA. You need to have a certain level of violence and gore. Like, you treat it like a laundry list of things to put in. You don't look for innovation and artistic merit in that arena. It's all about just being sleazy, trashy, big. And yeah, I'm satisfied with what I'm getting. Last time, I couldn't get into it. It was forever a barrier that they weren't getting these things right. And now that they are right, even though it's cheaper looking, even though it has less star wattage, it's a harder edged movie. It's a better film. And speaking of trash, we do have for night one some sex appeal. We've got to have, he's rewarded, right? Luke is allowed to do whatever he wants to Katrina. This was kind of extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, again, and I thought it was going to be the save the cat moment. Like, you are an independent woman. I respect you. We do not have to have a physical relation. No, they just fuck. They get it on. She's willing. It's consensual. Yes. So I'm okay with it, I guess.
They're both in prison, right? So they're getting a conjugal visit.
Yes.
And they're aware that they could be filmed right now, and they don't seem to care. They just realize, I like you, you like me.
Yeah, is this extra for the pay-per-view? Do they get to watch this, I assume?
Maybe. All I'm thinking about is, yes, I understand this is your opportunity, but a shower would be nice. They're just in a car, and they're sweating like crazy, I'm sure. Maybe a shower first, and then go for it, you know?
Maybe this is the kind of sex you want to watch in a dirty film like this. It feels sleazy. And then, again, the extra ripple is, this is taking it back to the original Corman. Remember, the Navigator was someone working for the enemy. We have Marcus, who is going to make the pitch, if you want your freedom, help me kill, you know, your driver.
Marcus being Sean Bean, who is the, yeah. So I didn't like any of this. I honestly don't think you need Sean Bean to keep coming back into the movie.
They paid him for the full day, Brock. They're going to use him.
No, I understand.
Yeah, what else would he be doing?
Okay, the character does not need to be here, regardless of Sean Bean or not.
Oh, I think so.
Why?
Because people don't treat the next day of racing like it's about getting out of prison. They hear $1 million, and suddenly you see every driver that's left just trying to kill Luke. And that means the stakes are way higher for the character that we are rooting for. So good job on that.
Okay, that angle of the movie didn't play as well with me as it did for you. That's one thing I would totally eliminate. Maybe put the bounty on his head, but then why keep going back to him? I don't need any more Sean Bean for that character in this movie. Put the bounty on his head, do what you're having to do, but to keep going back to him, him having a scene with Krachina and the ending too, there's really no need for any of that because it's not really adding much to the story of Luke here for me to actually need that character. That's all. Not a huge complaint.
I feel like they're using this whole bounty thing to, again, build relationships, something I think Stuart really enjoys with 14K because the Triads don't deal with him. They're not going to try to kill Luke.
Yes.
I understand.
We're going to a different criminal organization for protection if my guy is not going to protect me anymore. Again, just makes everything more interesting. It explains why, as he's ahead, he could win this race and he stops the car and turns around and saves 14K from being killed by his nemesis, Xander. They have that, you know, bonding. Again, it's the kind of scene that Statham and Tyrese needed to come together in the last movie. Here, yeah, they've given Robin Shaw more to do than he ever did last movie.
Yes. For sure.
And you get surprises here because I'm like, oh, okay, we're doing the same thing more or less. I'm expecting Frankenstein to win the last day. I'm wondering, I guess it's his first win, so he's still going to have to stay in prison. And I guess the next film, we'll see another win. But the fact that Bill dies, it was a shock. Like, and it's just from his navigator. Those women that Machine Gun Joe would never drive with, Big Bill gets it from his driver for calling her a bitch. And I think he hits her too. And at that moment, I'm like, oh, I assumed that was the Tyrese character. And now I'm like, where is this going? They've kind of shaken it up now.
Yeah, that moment was extra spicy because, yeah, what you're talking about is where everything gets changed. Like day one, yeah, some people died and I knew who they were and that made it more fun. But day two is going to end with Luke dying or seeming to die. The car is blown up by a heat-seeking missile and he's burning up inside. And then the guy, it isn't enough to have done that. He then goes by and just shoots up his entire pit crew. Like, he just kills the people that work on his ram and he shot them. Yeah, I love the fact that his navigator just pushes him out and runs him over.
But yeah, I'm like, is Luke going to die here? Because that car starts on fire. Katrina runs in. His pit crew runs. Like, everybody runs into this room and, like, there's no saving him. Like, that thing, yeah, is totally on fire, totally engulfed in flames. I'm wondering if he's dead. Like, they're going to bring in a totally different person. It'd be a weird plot development, but I have no idea where this is going.
I had forgotten about Frankenstein. And if they had hit it over the head, like, in the middle of day two, like, the sex scene, they were watching, like, the old Universal Frankenstein while they had sex or something like that. If they had underlined the fact that this is a Frankenstein origin story, I wouldn't have been as delighted as I was to realize when he's pulled out burnt what this all means. It's actually quite satisfying to know that he's turning into the character.
I was surprised it happened on stage two. That's the only thing. I knew it was going to happen at the end of the movie. I didn't realize that was going to be now.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of something we missed over earlier, Sean Bean is watching the original Death Race on his TV.
When they're hitting all the nurses and doctors.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It was pretty funny. So he gets burned here, and here's where everything starts getting set up for the next movie. But my question to you is this. He gets really badly burned. They put him in that suit and the mask for the race the next day?
No. He's out. 14K wins this race.
Okay.
This is the next death race. But my question, like, they talked about, like, putting something in his brain to fix neuron. I'm like, is he a cyborg? I was wondering how much work they did, and they just didn't have money to show it. It felt like a very high-tech lab they put him in.
I did not realize this wasn't stage three, but that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we don't see the end of this race.
Oh, okay. I just thought it was a campy decision. I'm like, sure, 24 hours later, you can be doing that.
Yeah, that was my problem too. I thought it was also, and I thought it might be a different day, but I wasn't sure, so I'm asking you guys. So yes, I wasn't the only one who was confused.
Yeah, they make it clear that 14K wins this round.
Okay, all right. You know what? They could have played it the other way, and I would have accepted it just because
He just shows up the next day.
Yeah, because it's that kind of silly. It has that camp.
Yeah, but he's really badly burned, though. Like, he's like Freddy Krueger burned. Like, he's really, really badly burned. And so Two-Face, also from The Dark Knight, kind of came, because his jaw, his mouth was that way. I mean, you don't want to put anything on those the next day, especially. So I'm glad it was some time. They didn't even put a salve. We didn't even see, like, a balm or anything on there. It looks like it's going to really be itchy and just not a good idea.
But what a stark contrast. I wanted to say, this actor has been nearly naked in most of his scenes. And now to see him wearing those prosthetics, weirdly enough, dramatically, I'm feeling his pain when he's smashing the mirror and realizing that, yeah, he can never have what he had before. And so the good news is he is dead, and thus Marcus is not going to send any more people after him. By being Frankenstein, he moves away from all the racers trying to kill him, but does he really want to make money? If you think of yourself as an employee and getting the ratings for that September Jones, yeah, he's got to get that revenge. It's what I said last time about killing Joan Allen. You've got to have the main character in his car going after the ball breaker.
And I just want to emphasize that bird makeup, when you get that shot of him like on the gurney, and it does like look the quality of Nolan did with Harvey Dent, like really good effects. They know where to put the money.
I agree with you completely. What I did not expect at the end of this movie was an homage to The Godfather. Did not expect that at all.
It's true. It is, though. Yeah, we have this cross-cutting three different assassination thing. And obviously, he's doing Godfather. He knows it.
Clearly.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it makes it more fun. It would be fun enough to watch September run over. By this point, everyone wants her dead. When they cut away to the warden that got fired in the bar and buying everyone around after she's run over. When they cut to Ving Rhames and, you know, he's dismissive and just happy he doesn't have to go to her 9 o'clock meeting the next day. Her death is enough, but that we have these two other ones, I don't know, it does add to the over-the-topness.
Yeah, the fact that this turns into a revenge film was a nice surprise. Again, I thought it was going to be a copy, another race. And no, none of this, like, at this point, it is just getting revenge on everyone. Shipping people in the showers and running over people, all that. Like, it's a totally different film, and I'm thankful for that. I'm like, yes, I thought we were going to get a repeat, and you found something different to do. This is a nice little surprise.
Yeah, and all people lists does it in the shower.
Yes.
Again, I mean, I've really liked him more this time than I did last time. And Danny Trejo, we haven't talked about him much, but when, you know, they call out his name Goldberg, he's the last Mexican Jew and he killed all the others. Yeah, I like this crew more. I like all these characters more. And it makes all the difference in the world. I wasn't asking for greatness last time. I was asking for coherence and I was asking for characters. And this ending, yeah, when we had the triads bumping off Sean Bean and nerdy little Liz coming for Rocco in the shower. And yeah, the evil newscaster woman, she can't resist being standing there, you know, taping it with her camera, never thinking that one of the drivers would go for her instead of the finish line.
Yeah, and you had mentioned earlier like little breadcrumbs they set up throughout the way because Luke stood up for Liss. Now Liss is taking revenge because 14K and Luke had this life debt thing he followed through. All of these things were set up, so it is strangely satisfying at the end of this movie. It's remarkable that this movie did this. And, you know, I remember the Modern Family, the TV show, had me in stitches one time when they did this kind of thing with The Godfather. That was a pretty funny way to end that episode. But I'm surprised we don't see more of these kinds of takes on The Godfather ending. I was really surprised. I thought it was cute and strangely satisfying. So it should not work in this movie to have that kind of ending, but yet it does. And it's just fun that they went there.
And it works not only in just the sense of like funny, but like dramatically, like I want her to be dead. Like I want him to run her down. I wasn't invested in who died last time. I didn't matter. And now it does matter. It matters that nerdy little list like gets to be cool and stab the bad guy in the shower. Like all of this, it's no Godfather. I think we can all admit a straight to tape Death Wish 2 is not even Godfather 3. Thank you. Yes, exactly. But it gets a little bit more power out of it than you would ever have guessed. Underestimate this at your peril.
So, Jacob, Stuart, do you recommend Death Race 2? Jacob.
You know, sometimes you could just look
at a brief description of a film, or the artwork, and you just go, uh-oh. And that's all I could think of when I had to put on Death Race 2 was, uh-oh. A direct-to-video sequel? Uh-oh. From the director of The Scorpion King 3? Hard Target 2? Multiple WWE films? And The Inhumans? Uh-oh. Starring Luke Goss? Star of... Uh-oh. Co-starring Ving Rhames standing around in a suit? Like some low-budget geezer teaser with the co-star Sean Bean standing around like he's in a geezer teaser with co-star Danny Trejo with 300 acting credits? He doesn't care if he's in a geezer teaser? Uh-oh. No race until almost an hour in? Uh-oh. So many uh-ohs for putting this film on to, like, the halfway mark. And then, like, something happens. As much as we've made fun of this cast, Danny Trejo and Liss, like, yeah, they carry me through. Like, they are enjoyable, just like I found Ian McShane and Liss in the last film. The stunts are back. They're using real cars again. This is not CGI heavy effects again. And they're even upstaging some of the stunts that I felt like they did in the last film. They have cool developments. The fact that this isn't a repeat, it was just a shock. This film really reminded me of the similar experience I had with Bird Box Barcelona, where I'm like, oh, I'm going to get the same thing in a different country. And then they found something new to do with that concept. And I'm all here for this. I like the concept of Death Race, but if I have to sit through four films that are connected, I need to have more than three laps every movie. And they found a way to do this. Listen, this is still cheap. There are still lots of uh-ohs. You're going to cringe in some scenes. Like, do not take this as us saying this is a great film, but it's entertainment. If you like that last Statham one, if you like the concept of Death Race and you want to get lost in that kind of world, I think you've said before, I know I've said it, I don't want to do franchises. I don't want a sequel to another movie. Like, I get it. Wrong podcast. All of a sudden, I'm like, I'm intrigued about part three. Like, that is a success for this crappy direct-to-video film. It's somehow getting a recommend from me. But yeah, it's a pretty, like, three-star, just a solid recommend. If you like action films, if you like Death Race, I think this one's going to work. Check it out.
Stuart.
And I'm just going to say ditto, which is, what's funny about that is we couldn't have been further apart, Jacob, last week.
I know.
And now we are in complete and total agreement about what we've just experienced. It is not a wonderful film. It is not memorable. If you didn't see it, your life's not going to be changed if you do. But yeah, if you just want to fill up your tank on B-movie high octane, it's been built to run correctly. I mean, the difference is I felt like everything was off about the vehicle last week. And maybe some of that was that they were trying to go more mainstream. The good news about this now being straight to tape is they don't have to be better than that. They can just be trash exploitation. And they are. Believe me, there's so much that's trashy. And would I enjoy it if it had more money and higher caliber? Sure, it would be a better movie. But this is a trash movie. It leans into it and does a really good job. And how could I hate on it? I wanted to. I had written not recommend before I hit the play button.
Right there with you.
There's no way to deny this movie's inventiveness, its ability to take negatives and make them strengths. We don't have Joan Allen. We'll create the warden character, show why she was brought into the prison. We're going to have an anti-hero that is really bad, that did kill cops, that has done bad things, and he has all of this vanity about how he looks and how he can bed women and take that all away by making him Frankenstein. Again, there's so much more pathos and just creativity and care that, yeah, it doesn't matter what this movie doesn't have. It's good enough for a recommend.
Yeah, it's going to be 3 for 3. I can't believe it. It's just remarkable.
Our listeners are furious.
Yeah, I enjoyed last week's movie more than Stuart did, but I think all three of us saw the same movie here. And I think the low expectations did help. But Jake and I mentioned it earlier, like halfway through this movie won me over. And then I was seeing all sorts of things that the movie was doing. And I was like, well, dang, good for them.
Mm-hmm.
I just, wow, just there's no reason this movie needs to be as good as it is. But let's be very clear. It's not a good movie.
Mm-mm. Yes. Mm-mm. Yeah, we are overselling it.
Yeah.
Because we are so shocked.
Yeah, but it actually works for exactly the same reasons the last time it worked for me. This one works as well, but then it actually does a little bit more that makes it, I think, a slightly better movie. The thing I'm missing, of course, is Jason Statham, the star power, right? I'm missing that a lot.
There's no star power here.
No star power whatsoever. So to me, it's, you know, I liked it much more than I thought I would like it. I was surprised at what it was doing, and it is a little more polished than it needed to be. Do I have hopes that the next one's going to be as good as this one or better? No, I do not. I think next week we're going to be treated to what we think, the three of us, the prejudice that we had going into this one. It might come back and hurt us next week. We'll find out when we get there. But for right now, Death Race 2 gets a green hour from me. And wow, that's amazing to me.
I did not see this coming. I thought I would be the only fan.
The three green arrows. Yeah.
I am so happy. Like, I was really surprised. I was like, I feel I'm going to have to come in here. I got to like plant my feet and really talk to these guys.
It's going to be a fight all over again.
Yeah. I'm like, good Lord. Yeah,
I know. We can definitely throw down when we can get passionate about really stupid shit. But we saw the same stupid shit.
Yeah, we did.
And here's the thing. Here's why you might feel a little bit more optimistic. They're keeping it all together. It's Luke Goss and this director.
Same crew, same director. Yeah.
Telling more of how Frankenstein, I guess, built the mythology. I guess it's building up to his death at the beginning of Death Race 2008. So it is the last prequel. And so it will fill in the gap between 2 and 1.
Is there a gap between 2 and 1 that needs to be filled?
No. I didn't think there needed to even be a prequel, and here we are.
Exactly.
So you can be optimistic that, yes, do I need it? Do I want it? Death Race 3 is not on my Christmas list, but yes, I have more curiosity and optimism than if you had asked me, even at the beginning of the series, if I wanted to go this deep into direct-to-video.
You know, it's interesting. You think about how many movies Charles Bronson and Steven Seagal would end up being on direct-to-video movies a lot. Like, he was one of the first ones to really make that transition. But can you imagine how many movies that we've seen of Charles Bronson's, or even maybe Clint Eastwood's, like the lower tier ones, might have been direct-to-video if that was available at the time? So the fact that some of those movies were released theatrically and these aren't, it's remarkable to me that this direct-to-video market is so successful.
Here's the thing I can say is that the only other time I've ever experienced this is when we covered Tremors.
I was going to bring that one up.
And I was like, why would we want to watch 6 straight to videos to one good movie? You know, I don't need to do it. And for years we avoided it. And then COVID happened and nothing was coming out but Tremors 7. And I said, I guess this is the year. And you can, again, I think that if you are willing to accept the limitations of the art, which is that direct to video is going to look cheaper. It's not going to have your favorite stars. It's going to have rough edges. It doesn't mean that it can't deliver. I think that Tremors proved that, and I think maybe this series could prove that.
And I think especially in a genre like action or horror, that's doubly true.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you want to see, like, quality, really good movie...
Real movies?
Join us Friday, because this one might be my favorite of the Platinum series. We got The Nice Guys. We got Russell Crowe. We got Ryan Gosling. He's red hot right now. He's got The Fall Guy coming out. We just celebrated his Ken and Barbie. And yeah, I think that this is a really good, maybe my favorite buddy movie. We'll have to see. It's worth checking out, and I hope you can join us this Friday for the end of Platinum.
I'm looking forward to that show. The Nice Guys was a nice surprise for me. It's a really great movie, and I'm looking forward to hearing you guys talk all about it. So I will be there for Platinum Level with everybody else. So thank you for donating to that series, because it's going to be a great one. The three of us will drive up to the starting line for Death Race 3 in the next podcast in this series.
What is it called? It does have like Inferno or something like that.
Yes, it is Inferno.
Inferno, Death Race 3 Inferno.
Maybe we'll get a Bloodlines at some point. You always get one of Bloodlines in the series if it goes long enough.
The next generation.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, until next time, damn, I love this game.
Well, America, there you have it.
Thank you for listening to this Now Playing Podcast movie review.
My pleasure.
Support from listeners like you keeps Now Playing Podcast on the air.
What'd you expect? Another pretty face?
You can donate directly by tapping the support button at nowplayingpodcast.com.
It's time for action.
You can also compare notes with us on Letterboxd. Go to letterboxd.com/nowplaying to see what our hosts are watching when we're not recording podcasts. And follow Now Playing on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our YouTube channel.
Why can't they see me as I see myself? A kind, gentle soul imprisoned by abs of steel.
Now Playing Podcast is produced by Arnie Carvalho.
He moves them, inspires them.
Associate produced by Jason Latham.
You're very good at what you do, and I'm very good at what I do.
now playing, is edited by Heath, Santiago, and Arnie.
Took the best, made it better.
Now playing credits, read by Brock.
I swear by St. Dwayne the Rock Johnson, I will slap that sinful tramp!
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
If you want to drive again next year, Mr. Viterbo, you'll keep those opinions to yourself.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein.
Don't talk to the other drivers. Frank never did part of the mystique. Let the mask do the work.
All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended.
You got that right.
Now playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2024, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Good night, Mr. Frankenstein.
You know who I thought would be better here and he's the right level is the guy who played the manager in Major League. He has that gruff voice. His name is Jim Gannon, I think his name is.
Arnie is not on this call right now.
But no, I know who you're talking about.
Arnie knows everything about Major League. I saw it once in 1988.
It's one of my favorite movies when I was in junior high, and I rewatched it a few years ago, and it's still a funny movie. Anyway, he's a rough kind of voice like this, kind of like Nick Nolte in later year kind of voice.